Hello, welcome to Think Rant, and before we do the normal announcements, there's going to be a change to the format, okay? Now that Trev is going to be more of a permanent feature of the podcast... Yep, there you are, celebration.
There was much rejoicing.
Yeah, we're not going to do this, I'm John Staver, I'm Steve Brett, and I'm Trev, right? What we're going to do is like a proper introduction, yeah?
And are you going to have your jingle again as well?
The jingle might make comeback, okay?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so what I want to do is I want to do a proper introduction saying, you know, I'm...
Can we sort of do it in Strike It Rich style, you know? So, good evening and welcome to Think Rant. I'm John Staver, your host tonight, and with me is...
No.
No?
No, because I listen to a...
No, please don't.
I listen to a podcast...
Is that not Rocky World, Trev?
No.
Surprise me.
Not so much.
I listened to a podcast today, and it was like an American, and it had obviously been put on the local radio as well.
Okay.
And it was just full of jingles, and somebody far too excited with the fact that they had a podcast. And it took them like 10 minutes to actually get into it, you know, before, you know. So what we're going to do is I'm actually going to introduce you two. So now what's going to happen is I'm like the official host.
Yeah.
And you two are co-hosts.
Yeah.
So I've got to introduce you. Okay?
Right, okay.
And we might swap around or something like that, okay? Okay, so we'll start again. Hello, welcome to Think Rant. This is all recorded. Okay. Hello, welcome to Think Rant. I'm John Stabler, and with me is Stephen Brett. You can say hello.
Hello.
And Trevor Williams.
Hello.
Actually, I didn't plan what to say after that.
Nice, well done, John.
No, today's the date. It's the 14th of April, 2011. Welcome to Think Rant, and we've got lots of news for you this week, especially Trev, because I think he's trying to take over, you know, and take up as much of the time as possible, I think. So, Trev, would you like to entertain us with a story?
I'd love to. I was going to be secret and snide and insidious, but now you've just blurted out my plans. So, but at least I put the time in.
Yeah, well, exactly.
So here, you know, so everybody else, just, you're not worthy. Okay, here we go. There was a story today about Ian Tomlinson. That was the man famously pushed to the pavement by the aggressive and overzealous policeman Simon Harwood in the anti-G20 summit demonstrations, and who also died in April 2009. There may or may not be a link between these two events, although a subtle link appears to be seen by the authorities. And he has, it was revealed in the Eye today, 5 times the legal driving limit of alcohol in his system when he died.
Mm.
Now, I, for one, am very excited to hear about the development and sale of invisible, intangible cars that must have been going on for over 2 years now. Clearly, he must have been driving one for this information to have any relevance to the inquest, but I couldn't discern the make or model in the footage of him being shoved to the ground by that stick-happy renter bastard. But this information being released, it's clearly trying to muddy the waters for those who want to prove the culpability of the officers who taped over their identification numbers and indiscriminately detained and pushed and struck protesters.
Well, of course it is. You're absolutely right, Trev. I mean, you know, you've hit the nail on the head there. Whether Mr. Thompson was drunk or not really has no bearing on the fact that he was battered and pushed to the ground. You know, at the end of the day, there was... there was no, as the video footage showed, there was absolutely no provocation on his part to the officer in question. He was just walking home, you know, quite happily, merry from the pub. Who cares if he was 5 times drunk, drive limit? Absolutely no relevance whatsoever.
Mm. I mean, they've kind of portrayed it that dawdling is some kind of crime.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. And, you know, looking at the footage, and of course with the inquiry into this, there's been additional footage beforehand as well, just to make sure that obviously he wasn't causing a problem before, and everything looked okay. There's no provocation. You can't say that amount of force was required whatsoever, and so I don't understand how you can say that it was okay for that officer to do that.
Hmm. Well, no, it's not. I don't think really anybody is trying to say that. I think, you know, there is obviously a massive damage limitation exercise going on by the police to try and the authorities to try and make it look not quite so bad. But I mean, I understand, Trevor. You've probably got the details there in front of you. But he died 150 seconds after he was hit. And you know, the whole follow-up autopsy and post-mortem, what have you, was all handled as a bit of a joke, really, with people changing their stories, changing what they'd written. It's you know, quite horrific, actually, that you think that this is going on in a country where, you know, we are supposed to be civilized, transparent, and, you know, be protected as citizens. But evidently that's not the case in this particular circumstance.
I'm quite worried that it looks like the pathologist, well, I hope that he didn't have any pressure put on him by the government or the police to come up with it. Tomlinson had coronary artery disease, and apparently he could have died at any time, the guy says. The pathologist admitted that a trauma like that could have aggravated the condition, but he still attributed the death to natural causes. So that's potentially terrifying for anybody with high-risk medical conditions, like, I don't know, me, for instance.
Yeah.
You know, my death certificate might as well be pre-printed with diabetic complications in the cause, because it will be stuck on the end.
Even if you have been brained by a police officer.
That's right. If I get an angry Rosa on my case, those diabetic complications are going to kill me a bit quicker, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, no, and you know, I just find the whole thing of you know, the case of Mr. Thomson aside, I mean, the whole thing of that handling of that event was absolutely atrocious. And I was reading today an article, which I wasn't going to bring up tonight. As we're sort of on the subject, I sort of come back to it, where the case of Kettling is being referred to the European Court, because. They're, you know, the people are trying to say that obviously the Metropolitan Police are behaving in a completely unreasonable and illegal way, and I think that, you know, the initial findings are that that is the case, that Kettling is, you know, or Kettling as it's been used in certain cases isn't just.
And only today, so this comes on the back of news today that a UK judge has ruled that one instance of Kettling used at the climate protests was illegal.
Yeah, well, that's actually the story I was reading. So, yeah, you've obviously read the same story there. So, you know, and I think that's great. Is that I think what it's doing is it's going to give the Met, hopefully, a wake-up call to review their practices. Okay, it's only the one-off case where they're saying it was wrong in these cases where, you know, the police baton charged a peaceful protest where there was no rioting at all following a Kettling. But hopefully it'll make the Met realise that these sort of tactics aren't suitable for Western civilization. And I use the word civilization in its loosest possible terms at the moment.
Yeah. Well, this story, just mentioning all the times I've seen it mentioned, the headline has had the drink in his system right at the top, which it makes me cross at the papers. And the pathologist, and but of course, most of all, I'm cross at Simon Harwood, who can write his insincere apology to the Tomlinson family on his truncheon and shove it up his arse.
Mm.
As far as I'm concerned.
And one thing that's come out of this inquest is he's looked like a bit of a muppet, to be fair, under questioning, because it's just come across that he's lied about so much.
Well,
and
he perjured himself, you know, initially. His initial response, his signed statement, he's perjured himself. So, you know, that man needs to face criminal trial.
Yeah.
Get in the cell right next to Jeffrey Archer. Is he still in prison?
No, he's out.
Sadly not.
No.
Oh,
but, okay. Have you got any more on that, Trev?
There was another one today which might be pertinent to all three of us. Bloggers are suing Arianna Huffington for a $105 million slice of the money she got for the Huffington Post. So if Think Rant ever makes money, John, we're coming for you. Oh, yeah.
To be honest, I don't mind giving you a slice of the massive
25p.
pie. Yeah. I haven't even got AdWords on the blog yet. I mean, I should do that, really.
But, well, listen to this, though. With the humility typical of a millionaire socialite swatting away claims of theft, misrepresentation, and intellectual laziness, she said, in a stupid accent probably, which I'm not going to try and do.
Thanks.
She said, if people go on Newsnight, they don't get paid. Ignoring the salaries of the many reporters and presenters and staff, including Kirsty Walk and Jeremy Paxman, who although they would get paid a lot more if they weren't at the BBC, I'm pretty sure they get paid.
I'm sure Paxman does it for the love, you know?
Yeah, to be fair,
for the integrity alone.
I would love to shout at politicians. I'd do it for free, I tell you. But, yeah, so is that likely to work, though? I mean, are the bloggers, do they have a chance?
It's hard to say. It's a class action suit. A whole bunch of them have got together. And they must have an awful lot of experts in that group of people, regardless of who's representing them.
Yeah, but to be fair to the HuffPo, I mean, there's some pretty poor work on there as well. I mean, don't even get me started on people like Deepak Chopra and I'll just stop there, really.
Yeah.
I'm going to hold my hand.
Her idea of providing the liberal alternative. Some people have taken quite seriously to provide a liberal political alternative, and some just bollocks, really.
I have to hold my hand up and say I've never read the Huffington Post.
Well, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Do you think maybe I should?
Most of the time I get directed to the HuffPo is to go and check out something to you know, be angry at, you know, rather than something that informative.
Well, maybe it'd be good for me to have, you know, broaden my horizons from the Daily Fail.
And the BBC News website. Yeah. I mean, surely there's other things I'd recommend before that, probably. Trev, would you recommend any news source for me?
Well, I think it must be quite a valuable resource for Americans, because the Fox News-style media that they have to suffer, they're only going to find an alternative version of the story on the Huffington Post. So, you know, for that, I suppose I can forgive it a lot of its faults.
Yeah, because, I mean, until that came along, it was either Fox News or The Onion.
Yeah.
Well, I would tend to believe The Onion over Fox News, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's usually right in some kind of ironic way. Whereas Fox News is just completely made up.
As long as you remember that the Death Star doesn't actually exist, then most of their stories you can make sense of.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I've got a little... do you want to go next, Steve, or shall I?
No, you go next, mate. That's fine.
Okay. I got a nice short one here. It's you've probably seen it, and I hate if I've stolen this story off anybody, but this is the best story of the week in my book. Poster for The Walking Dead on funeral parlor wall.
Damn.
No, I
sorry,
missed
that
one.
Have I got this one off you, Trev? Have I stolen it?
Yeah, but it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. This is yesterday. This was on my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you. Basically, an advertising firm's apologised for placing a billboard for a TV show called The Walking Dead on the side of a funeral parlour. Now, I'm not massively into the zombie genre, which a lot of people would probably be surprised at, but it's pretty obvious from this poster, you know, lots of people armed to the teeth, that, you know, it's you know...
It's a very good series. Very good series, based on a brilliant comic.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. I might try one out then. The unintended, unfortunate juxtaposition caused some raised eyebrows in County Durham. The advert for the Channel 5 post-apocalyptic drama has since been removed.
That's a shame, because I think that's genius.
But I'm wondering, and I can't see this from the story, whether there is actually any complaints, as in proper complaints from the public, or whether it is just.
Adult moment.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of information. It's just the irony of the story alone makes you want to mention it.
Well, the actual poster also has at the top of it, "What makes us human?" To which you might say, empathy, compassion, consideration for the feelings of others, maybe.
Yeah, or the fact that you don't have some virus that turns you into a slobbering, you know.
Also, very, very important. Yes.
Yeah, definitely. So I had to get that one in just because, I don't know, I think knowing people who've worked in funeral parlours and stuff, they probably thought it was funny as hell.
Oh, the people in the funeral parlour would have loved it.
Yeah. So,
Gallows humour, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So, go on then, Steve.
Okay, A short one first then, because I'm sure we'll all agree on this one, to be honest with you. So maybe from that point of view it's a bit of a non-story, but I just wanted to mention it because I wanted to name the pub in question so we can, you know, further encourage people to avoid it. Two gay men in Soho in London went into a pub called the John Snow and were asked to leave for kissing in the bar.
Really?
Yep. First of all, a gentleman who was drinking next to them, who was wearing no sort of official apparel, stood up and said, excuse me, I'm a landlord. We sort of don't want that sort of behaviour here. Will you please leave? Which was later followed then by the landlady, allegedly, who was dressed in official uniform, asking them to leave because of their disgusting behaviour. As it so happened, as they were being shown the door, the couple who were unrelated to them on the table next door protested these people's innocence, saying they were just having a bit of a kiss. There was nothing seedy or untoward about it. They also got ejected at the same time. So that's a pub to avoid in Soho, man. Folks, the John Snow.
Yeah, that is... I mean, that just reminds me of a story that we didn't actually cover on the podcast. It was one of my one of those weeks where I had so many stories, we didn't get to it, about there was some kind of... I think it was a gay rights society rented out a pub for for an event, only to find out when they got there that they weren't welcome because the regular drinkers weren't happy about it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, really getting evicted from a pub.
Yeah, apparently it was only the one person who made the complaint, which was a gentleman, so it probably does seem like he was the landlord of the pub. But yeah, I mean, I suppose the other alternative is just for gay folks just to go there and have a big snog fest.
Mm.
You know, just bombard it, just, or go there en masse.
But are you saying, so is there a rule against snogging, anybody snogging? Or
no,
is it just purely
just
gay people?
Yeah, yeah, and it's just saying, it was like a romantic couple. It was actually their first date, apparently, as well. It was just, like a romantic night out, nothing seedy or untoward about it.
Well, I'm quite impressed with that, because usually on first dates, all I get is the bill.
Have a lot of first dates lately?
No. I mean, to be honest, as soon as I found one woman who... hang on a second, the blooming phone's ringing now. Carry on.
Okay. Well, yeah, Steve, I'm glad that you you mentioned the extra bit about the couple next to them saying there was nothing bad going on. Because you can never tell with stories like this. It could be that the couple, tore each other's shirts off and started sucking their nipples in front of the family pub. And they've just upped the ante to and disguised certain bits to make it sound like they were being thoroughly intolerant.
Yeah.
But there were people there saying it was just a bit of a kiss. What's the problem?
Exactly. And for me, I just think in this day and age, it's completely out of order. And, even more remarkable is the fact that this pub is in Soho, which, is, let's be honest, quite a liberal part of London. So I'm very, very surprised that that sort of action was taken by the proprietors of the pub. But it's the pub is part of the Samuel Adams chain. So, it'd be very interesting to see what Samuel Adams chain has to say about it. The pub itself refused to comment.
All right, sorry, go on.
So I'd never heard the phrase Samuel Adams chain before. It sounds like a gay piercing.
Not in the John Snow, it's not, Trev.
The John Snow. It does, though. It sounds very dodgy. I've got a Samuel Adams chain up my John Snow.
It's like being sat here with two cockneys. What the hell's going on?
I just wanted to bring that to your attention, because I'm sure we're all pretty much well.
So is that an ongoing story, then? Are we going to hear more from
that? Hopefully we'll hear more about it. It was just I just caught it on the Guardian website today, just as I was flicking through. And I just thought, that's something to have a rant about, because, that sort of intolerant behaviour.
We love those kind of stories.
Yeah, exactly. So that's just why I wanted to bring it up, really. I suppose the other point which I've got here, which I think might be quite a good one. In Switzerland, a Swiss region, I can't remember which Swiss region it was, is looking to pass a law whereby elderly people in state care homes will have the choice for assisted suicide.
Oh, okay.
Outside of the clinic, such as Dignitas, this will actually be in the care home. So I was just wondering what people's thoughts were on that. On the issue, firstly, of it being a regional sort of government sponsored initiative, for want of a better word, and you know, just assisted suicide in general.
Well, you can go first, Trev.
I think it's utterly wonderful. I think one of the biggest harms that religion does is, in our country at least, having bishops in the House of Lords, meaning that euthanasia bills, they know they're never going to get through. Even though about 80% of the population, when polled, think that if you have a terminal illness and you need to end your life, then they've got no objection to it. I think any step towards that is absolutely wonderful. Actually, my dad died of MS just 3 years ago, but the last 13 years of his life were a pretty horrible decline. And I know that he used to tell me that he didn't want to live like that. So if he had known that there was the option at some point during that time to end his life, then, well, it would have been less awkward. I would have been able to visit him more. There are all sorts of excellent reasons for introducing a system like that. And there's only one reason not to, and that's the sanctity of life, which is a pile of crap. That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with most of what you said. I mean, do you have any concerns about it, Steve, yourself? Or
No, not really, actually. To be honest with you, I do actually agree with what Trev says. I mean, I personally speaking, if I was unlucky enough to be struck down with something like motor neurons disease or MS or some sort of disease of that nature, then sure, I'd want to live out as many days as I could, as fulfilled and as fully as possible. But once I'd lost the means to do that, and I would become a burden either upon family or the state, because I wouldn't much know about it myself, then, you know, I would want, you know, via a sort of living will or something like that, to have made that decision to end it, to be honest with you. You know, I think we see people living in care homes and institutions who have no quality of life whatsoever. I think, you know, you made a good point there, Trev, about the sanctity of life. And, you know, I do believe that life is sacred, and that's why we have things like, you know, murder is illegal, for example, you know. But actually, if you have no quality of life, what is the point of life? You know, if every day is a painful struggle, or you have no knowledge of what is going on around you, then, you know, as adult human beings, we should be able to make that choice to say, do you know what, I've had enough.
Yeah, and I suppose it's the one time when, you know, a utilitarian outlook is probably best, in so much that you're actually increasing suffering by forcing someone to stay alive.
Precisely.
You're not actually, you know, increasing the happiness because that person's staying alive. And a lot of people seem to put too much stock in, you know, the feelings of the family, you know, because if they lost the person. And they really do ignore.
But then that's just selfish feelings at the end of the day, isn't it? And don't get me wrong, you know, I would hate to have to make that decision with a member of my family, because obviously you wouldn't make that decision on behalf of a member of your family, because at the end of the day, you've got no right to do that either. It has to come from the person who is affected.
But sometimes they can't. I mean, you know,
that's the difficulty. I think at the moment, because there's no provision for it, it's a very difficult thing, because, you know, I think you've got people who are unable to make that decision for themselves because their faculties have gone so badly. Is it right then for somebody else to make that decision for them? I'm not sure that it is. I mean, I've not really thought this through fully.
Well,
so
actually, that it's another additional harm. Rather than the additional days that are imposed on you of suffering, it's the fact that, and one of the reasons why the Dignitas Clinic is called that, is because if you've made the decision for yourself that you don't want to go on anymore, and the government says, we're not going to let you make that decision. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's such a stripping of dignity.
Oh, I
if you are able to make that decision for yourself, it's one last thing you can do.
But that's what I mean, you know. So, using it as a sort of example, if I was to be diagnosed with one of those sort of conditions and the opportunity for euthanasia was there, then I would make that quite clear in a living will and say, look, you know, once I'm no longer compos mentis, or, you know, once I've made that decision that enough is enough, these are my wishes and carry them out.
I mean, maybe everyone, just like we have a donor card, people could carry around a,
exactly,
you know,
yeah,
take me around the back of the barn and shoot me card.
Yeah, yeah, put me down.
Yeah. That kind of thing would work. It, I mean, it's going on in, it's in Sweden, isn't it?
Switzerland, Swiss.
Yeah, and some states in America also have types of euthanasia. And all the states, including all the countries that have had these things in effect, have been studied by various universities across the world for cases of wrongful use of the legislation to see if somebody's been pressured into it. And it's just not been found. There have been accusations made, usually by grieving family members.
I mean, one of the rules in Switzerland is that whoever assists in the suicide has to be somebody who has no gain to be made out of the person dying.
Mm. Which makes things tricky. It can make things very tricky because, you know, normally it is going to be a spouse. And how is a spouse not going to, you know...
Well, I think... I mean, I don't know because I haven't looked into it, but I think maybe the spouse would be allowed to be there, but they're not allowed to pass the person the drugs or inject them or...
Yeah.
Okay.
Anything like that.
Yeah, do you have anything to add, Trev?
I did, but it's fallen out of my head.
Oh, okay.
So I mean, one thing which it's just struck me now as we're talking about it, you know, euthanasia is not allowed in this country, but we still switch off life support machines. You know, is that not a form of euthanasia?
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to some very old thinking. Whereas actually killing somebody with drugs is an active thing, whereas, you know, indirectly pulling the plug isn't. And this is, to me, they're identical.
Of course they're identical. It goes back to what we were watching last night, the Michael Sandel program on justice and the trolley problem, which we've discussed before, that, you know, whether you're inactively, you know, not doing anything or doing something, you are responsible at the end of the day for that person's death, you know?
And, of course, you could argue that you have, you know, a moral duty to prevent suffering, so you could argue that you have a duty to help someone end their life if they're really miserable.
That does remind me what the thing was that I was about to say and forgot, because it's complicated. And it's that whenever you bring up a subject like this, people always point out how incredibly complicated it is and how many different pressures the family members, the ones who will be left behind, have got on them. And how much more pressure this would be because it's such an awesome decision. But when you're in a situation like that, there's already going to be all these problems. Whatever decisions you make about how often you visit, how much time you spend, what issues you discuss with the person, whether you talk to them like as if they can hear you even when they're having a bad day, that kind of thing. There's guilt involved. You'll never feel like you did exactly the right thing. So you're already in a horrible situation. Most people who have given a response, about 80%, have appreciated that there is an answer to it. It's just not an easy answer.
And it's not one that anyone wants to make on behalf of another person. So I'm all for them saying, yes, you can do it. And them and the government saying, but you need to put something in place. Like you have, like you said, a living will that says if I'm ever put into a condition where the outlook is extreme or, you know, I'm not able to communicate. I mean, you can specify different levels.
Of course you can.
And then it's dealt with that way.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I can imagine situations where it would be a good idea for that to actually override what a spouse may want, because I think it's a very personal
thing. I agree, and you know, on the subject of sort of donor cards as well, I think that should be the case there. I carry a donor card. I carry a donor card because I believe quite strongly that, you know, if I have healthy organs which somebody else can use to live on, then they're welcome to them because I don't need them anymore. But if I had a spouse or, you know, my next of kin could say, they can override my wishes and say, well, no, we don't want them to be used. We don't want the organs to be used. But I'm very clear that, you know, when I die, if my organs are harvestable, do it. I don't need them. Somebody else does.
Okay.
Actually, I've looked into that as well, and because we've been discussing a fairly morbid and maudlin subject, to lighten the mood a little bit. I'm not allowed to donate my blood and most of my organs because of the medication I'm on, but I could donate my body to science. My entire body. How cool would that be? They might stick me on a bus.
Medical students would have a field day, Trev.
They'd love it.
I was planning on donating myself to the Louvre.
Okay.
What, would you have yourself embalmed into the pose of Rodin's The Thinker or something, is it?
No, it's just so...
Damien Hirst might have a plan for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, the title of me as a piece would be, I Know I'm No Oil Painting. That's it. Nope, I'm definitely giving myself to medical science. And it quite often comes up, what do you want done to you after? I'm for, just chuck me in the incinerator. You know, I don't want anyone having to find a hole to put me in or, you know, scatter me anyway. Just chuck me in with the rest of the medical waste.
Nice. Anyway, I think we've done that one to death, as it were. So,
puns. Oh, great.
I do apologize. It's still left open best man mode, you know. It's you've got to get the bad jokes in. Something else which, if nobody minds me, you know, having another go. Has anybody else got anything to add at the moment?
Well, Trev might want to go.
Yeah, well, I was just saying, you know, Trev just said go ahead, so, you know.
No, please, go ahead.
You know, come on, John, I've got some stories this week.
All right, come okay, on, okay, you know. I'll take advantage.
Just to get your thoughts, really, on the current storm, which is again brewing around immigration. You know, there's an election coming up, and we've got the parties wheeling out the immigration
card. Playing the immigration card, This is after Cameron's comments and Cable today.
Well, yeah, you had Cameron, who last week was saying, you know, Oxbridge, they're not allowing enough black people and ethnics into their colleges, and they should be reprimanded for that. Yet he's saying the country, this today, he's then saying the country's letting too many immigrants into the country, and we shouldn't have so many immigrants. I'm not quite sure what Vince was saying, to be honest with you, because I didn't really see what his comments particularly were.
Do the Labour Party know what Gillian Duffy has to say about this?
I think we all know what Gillian Duffy has to say about this.
Okay, Trev, what
can
you
I be the voice of dissent and say I have no idea what Gillian Duffy thinks about this?
Gillian Duffy was the lady who Gordon Brown called a bigot last year.
Oh, bless her. Right.
Yes, yeah, and she managed to get Clegg on the ropes this week as well.
Yeah, and now that Gordon Brown's not in the party,
that was brutal.
Yeah, she's
like she went to her and said, "Oh, poor Cleggy Waggy, it's all gone a bit sad for you, hasn't it?" Oh, well, she's gonna chin him.
I think she would make a better leader of the Labour Party. You know, because at least she speaks her mind. You know. She doesn't like foreign people coming into her country, you know. But
she's forthright about it.
Yeah, so
she might be as well. If she mentions anything about the Taliban, it won't be a ridiculous headline. Duffy on the Taliban doesn't look ridiculous. Miliband on the Taliban does.
I mean, to be fair, you know, I mean, they'll just win a lot of votes from the youth people when they just see Duffy. Someone they can vote for.
Look at John trying to prove he's down with the kids.
I think
when they see it's her, they'll still think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they don't put her photo next to the, you know, where you're voting, so maybe they should.
Maybe they should.
How could George Osborne ever get elected again?
Yeah. You know, what are your thoughts? I mean, something which David Cameron said, which I found quite interesting, is that apparently, between 1997 and 2009, there were 2.2 million extra immigrants. Now, okay, I think what we can see there is we had the opening up of the European borders and, you know, migration became free within there, which obviously plays a large part in our migration and people coming into the country. But he then goes on to claim that 75% of the 2.5 million jobs that have been created have gone to migrants. So that's just over 1.5 million, 1.6 million jobs have gone to migrants, the 2.2 million migrants. And then he's trying to claim then that immigration is putting pressure on the welfare state. That doesn't seem to add up to me.
No, it doesn't add up
to
me.
No, that claim certainly doesn't. I don't know if this is true, but I'm a dreadful cynic. And it could be the case that a lot of jobs that have been created are part-time jobs created from breaking down full-time jobs, mm-hmm. so that there are more actual jobs. And people who aren't yet eligible for benefit are definitely going to be taking those, including people like immigrants,
yes.
for example. There could be a very easy correlation through jobs just not being the kind of decent jobs they used to be.
Okay.
But I mean, I guess is there, I'm just throwing this out there, but is there not a case that the work-shy people of the UK still wouldn't take those jobs even if the immigrants weren't taking them?
Because,
I'm throwing it out there, Trev. I'm not saying I necessarily hold this thought, but the jobs are there at the end of the day. Why are they going to the immigrants? Why aren't they going to white British people? Is it because they're not applying for the jobs? Are they not taking them? Why have they gone to the immigrants?
It just sounds like a... Sorry, go on, Trev.
Oh, okay, cheers. I always have a problem with anybody saying about the work-shy British because, well, I'm one of them. a part of it is the generational culture of sink estates where all the work has moved away and people are so isolated.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that there were going to be efforts made about reducing rather than completely stopping benefit when you do get a job, or providing easy transports out of estates towards jobs. It was when, I can't remember
who
the politician was.
Get on the bike to work again, Ian yeah. Duncan Smith talking about Merthyr and get on the bus and go to Cardiff.
Yeah, and he was suggesting things like if transport were provided and if the cut-off of benefit were not so severe and sudden, would that help? And clearly it would, but I still haven't seen that implemented yet.
No. Well, no, the Tory voters aren't going to like that, are they?
No.
These people have got jobs and we're still paying for them to get to work? No, we don't want to be doing that. So, it's not going to be popular with the Tory faithful, is it?
Yeah, I think there's just so much misinformation about immigration in general. Quite often, especially in the run-up to the last election, there was a lot of figures being
bandied around,
and they kind of disagreed with each other.
Mm.
And it seems to me sometimes that the government purposely doesn't keep track of these figures. It doesn't bother collecting the data because... it would rather keep it as a political rather than an empirical or discussion, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because if you could say, right, there's this number of people coming in, this number of people going out, fact. This is how many jobs, fact. If we were dealing with facts, I think it would be a much easier thing to deal with, but that it's actually the opposite.
But no, what we've got to deal with is all the rhetoric. That's one of the biggest issues. I mean... we hear this talk about, how we're going to stop immigration, we're going to cut immigration numbers, yada, yada, yada. But as I said, a good percentage of our immigration comes through our European borders. Mm. And we can't stop that because we're part of the European Union.
Unless we pull out, which would be the extreme thing.
Which would be the Daily Mail reader's choice. But, there's a lot of benefits to being in Europe and that's not going to happen. So, unfortunately, it's a free border. We have to put up with the fact that, people are going to come to Britain for jobs.
Hmm.
And at the end of the day, there's nothing stopping you or me, other than maybe language barriers, going to Germany, France, Slovakia, whatever, to go and get a job over there.
Sprechen Sie English, mate.
Exactly. Yeah, precisely. So
you just say it louder and slower.
Yeah. Do you speak English?
And you just get louder each time.
Yeah.
So, I just think that it is. I think, immigration is hidden behind a cloud of rhetoric every single time it comes to an election. And it would be quite nice to see some truth on the matter, to be honest with you. Just one last sort of interesting fact, which I found quite interesting, in terms of this anyway, which is David Cameron is saying that, immigrants, when they come into the country, they need to learn to speak English, they need to, integrate into the community into which they're living, which is fine, I kind of agree with that. Yet because of the cuts his government is making, those free English lessons, which were available to those immigrants coming into the country, have now been cut.
You can't make that up, can you?
No. So well done, David.
Yeah, I mean, last week, you were here. We were calling him a twat and everything. Trev started it.
Well, you're just saying it like it is, aren't you, really? Let's be honest. Yeah. You know. So, yeah, there we go. That was my thoughts on that, really.
Okay. Any other things to add on to immigration then, Trev?
No, I'm done on that.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'd say on immigration is don't get these people that talk about how Britain is overpopulated. Don't get me started. I will kick your ass if you start saying stupid things like that.
There's just no room for anyone anymore.
Go on, Trev. Give us a story, mate. We've got 20 minutes to go.
Here's a story to cheer everybody up. Depression. Ooh.
Yay!
Yay! Yeah, you may have heard about Catherine Zeta-Jones has got depression.
Oh, bipolar disorder, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to belittle that in any way, but on Sky News today, a whole bunch of different people, maybe seeking publicity, were popping out of the woodwork saying, oh yeah, I'm depressed as well. I get a bit sad. And in this, a surprise revelation, Alistair Campbell reveals his own recurring depression, leaving him with a dead feeling inside for a few days every couple of weeks. A shocking application of logic reveals that he doesn't feel like this most of the time.
He's not dead. Oh, okay, fair enough.
We appreciate the devastating effects of mental disorders and illnesses and the need for encouraging and effective spokesperson. But the overall community of persons with mental health issues needs Alistair Campbell for a spokesperson, a hate figure with less than half the capacity for empathy of a regular human being, like the practicing chiropodists need Heather Mills on their posters.
Although Heather Mills, tends to gold.
She isn't advertising ethical treatment of animals so much since she was publicly shamed for torturing a beetle.
Trev, I'm so sorry. I think we need to just rediscuss this thing.
I agree with you, Trev. I think you know that there's a stigma attached to mental health and mental health issues, and we need to break down those barriers. Having one of the most reviled men in the country standing up to do that isn't probably the best way. They might as well follow that up with Piers Morgan doing a campaign, followed by Richard Littlejohn. You know, I think that would really, really sway people's opinions on mental health issues.
Yeah, and
that's a very good point.
I mean, they already had a good spokesperson for bipolar in the form of Stephen Fry. You know, he did a whole
documentary. Everybody loves him.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's bad news about Catherine Zeta-Jones. You know, she's had a hard time, what with her husband and all that. And anything that promotes mental health, brilliant. I saw some people been interviewed on the streets of Swansea, and it was nice to see people saying something intelligent about mental health issues, saying how, yes, we know we need greater awareness. So,
I thought you were going to say it was nice to see people speaking intelligently in Swansea.
Swansea, that's what I thought he was going to say as well, to be honest with you, Trev. That's where I thought he was going.
Throw away listeners.
Great, you know, I mean, if we don't make it worldwide, guys, we've got the local listeners, and you've just got rid of half of them. Well done.
I don't think they know how to use computers in Swansea anyway.
Oh, it's getting worse. I've got a Catholic story.
Yay!
Yay!
We should have a jingle for Trev's Catholic Story of the Week.
whoa, there it is.
I'm going to have to edit that, otherwise I'm going to have to pay some money to ITV.
Oh, man.
How many bars is it?
Anything like that, it's 8 seconds.
All right, it's not how many bars, it's okay.
It's 8 seconds.
Okay, carry on.
Okay, Vatican sex error fixed in today's eye. The Italian publisher of a new book on Catholic Church teaching fixed a translation error that implied the Vatican backed contraception, with an insert yesterday that stresses traditional church teaching on sex.
Oh.
It's a youth-focused compilation of key church teachings, and it was presented to Pope Benedict yesterday at his general audience when he officially launched a Vatican news conference. On the eve of the presentation, officials confirmed that publishers had pulled the Italian copies to fix the error, which concerned whether married couples could plan the size of their families.
Ah, so you see, this is the thing about the Catholic Church. They're just on the brink of doing something maybe good, and they just have to pull back straight away.
Yeah. Well, that's the point, isn't it, Charlie?
They're in the method of contraception, or as it's more correctly known, no bloody contraception.
Yes.
Yeah, the point is that, of course, translation invites errors. There's the Italian version apparently makes it seem like they're okay with euthanasia. And the Bible itself is a masterwork of mistranslation and interpretive ham-fistedness.
Yep.
And the Catholic Church's policies are plucked from the sky by God's apparent mouthpiece on earth and justified by reference to bizarre text that apparently, I mean, it's not even mentioned in the Bible. I don't know where it gets it from. I mean, the Immaculate Conception, everybody imagines that that's the birth of Jesus, but it's not. It's about the birth of Mary, making her completely blameless and sin-free for her entire life, and it's nothing from the Bible at all. It's all Pope-inspired nonsense.
Was this not somebody about spilling their seed somewhere as well? That's not...
it's probably in the
bit of... Those are just the bits of Bible you remember, I think.
Sorry, it's the Lego Bible.
It's probably a sympathize or something like that, you know.
You got to sympathize with the translators because they have to both explain and maintain nonsensical policies against euthanasia and contraception without mentioning how these policies just massively increase the flock of the Catholic Church, which is obviously their intention in the first place.
I mean, is it really?
I think that's very cynical there, Trev.
Yeah, it is cynical.
I'm not coming to the defence of the Catholic Church on contraception here. I'm not sure that their thought is, let's make our people have as many kids as we can so we can rinse their kids for as much money as we can as well. I think there's an issue there of...
Every sperm is sacred?
Every sperm is sacred. No, I think it's the... It's the faith thing coming back in, isn't it? You know, and going back to the sanctity of life, life
as we
sacred.
Call the Pope.
Yes, yeah,
yeah, yeah. But what Trev's saying basically is, all right, they say that every sperm is sacred and sanctity of life, but did they catch on to this trick a long time ago and realise that it was best to have as many kids? I mean, you know, I'm a cynical guy as well.
Yeah.
But I don't know. They're too serious about it. You know, I can't agree that. They're that evil that they would inflict massive suffering on the world.
It's a numbers game.
Just to increase the number of people in the Catholic Church.
Surely it's less evil, though, because if you imagine that it was just a deluded Pope in the late 60s who imagined that he heard God telling him that condoms and contraception was evil, and that's the only reason? It was just that God said and God didn't even have a reason? That's insane.
Yeah, but that's
you can,
how
you can at least understand. Well, yes, that's true. But at least there's a motivation that another human being can understand without necessarily subscribing to all the religious nonsense.
I think you're trying to read a bit too much into it there, Trev, to be honest with you.
Have you noticed that Catholic families tend to be huge?
You're trying to give them a way out there by saying that, you know, that's what it is. I'm kind of with John there that I think it's, you know, it's just... Yeah.
I'm sure someone at some point in the Catholic Church has framed it as we need, you know, it's a family thing to have more children, but I don't.
Well, it goes back, doesn't it? It does go back to the whole Adam and Eve thing and go and multiply and fill the earth with your progeny, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, but... be fruitful and multiply, and watch out for the pill. It will come along in a couple of millennia.
Exactly. Yeah. In a couple of millennia. There's going to be some drugs. They're going to be pretty bad. You know, don't take them.
You know, I wasn't around in the 50s. I just want to know. I'd love to have been around when they announced the pill was, you know, when they invented it and said, check this out, this new invention. Could you imagine? I just wanted to hear what the Catholic Church would have been like at the time. Surely they were spitting teeth.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Absolutely, of course they were.
So, yeah.
And almost in response to that, a divine revelation occurs where contraception is suddenly not allowed. How weird is that?
Coincidence?
It's almost as if...
Are you becoming a conspiracy theorist now, Trev?
It's not a conspiracy, it's one guy. You remember the faith thing, as we called him?
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. All right, fair enough.
I'm okay. Just saying, devious motives of religions that serve themselves.
Well, I mean, you can't deny that. I mean, to be fair, I mean, if it hadn't been for their if it hadn't been for the anti-contraceptive position, there wouldn't be that many Catholics around. You know,
that's very true.
So that's a fact. We'll go with that. We're gonna stay kind of on religion, but it's more of a political thing. You are finished on that now, aren't you, Trev?
I am. I've got something else about Ireland, which is tangentially connected. I can come to that later.
If we have time, we've got 10 right. minutes. But I don't know, we might get rid of this one quickly. But unfortunately, the first woman's been fined for wearing the burqa in France.
Yes.
Police fined a woman in a shopping centre car park outside Paris for wearing the niqab. That is how you pronounce it, isn't it?
I presume so.
Yeah. Or full face veil. It's the first time the law's been enforced. So she was fined €150. That's £132. So, I mean, there's no point talking about, you know, all the ins and outs of how she was taken to the police station and fingerprinted and her picture taken. But what are your thoughts on this, Steve, first of all? I mean, how are you feeling about this burqa ban?
We've discussed this before, haven't we, really?
I just wonder if you change your mind. We change our minds sometimes.
Yeah, I can't remember what I said last time, you see. That's the problem.
Oh, I should do this more often.
No, I think... As I think I said before, I'm not sure necessarily that the state has a right to pass legislation on something like this. But I'm not in favour of burqas or niqabs or whatever, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that, you know, women should have to wear them. I totally understand the point that, you know, some women are oppressed and wear them because they're being oppressed. Some may argue that all women who wear them are oppressed. I'm not sure necessarily that it's the state has a right to intervene on that. I don't know. What do you think, Trev?
Well, you say that you're not sure if the state has a right to intervene. I am damn sure that the religion doesn't have a right to enforce the wearing of these items. And the only way to make sure that that doesn't happen is to ban that full amount.
Mm-hmm.
That woman, the first woman to wear it in defiance, she must think she's chocolate. The only thing it says is you have to dress modestly. And she's come out wearing this thing saying, I'm sorry, this is the only way I can dress modestly. If I take one more item of clothing off, you're all going to fall over yourselves. I'm too gorgeous.
But, I mean, look at the question is, though.
But she was a
man. Where I'm coming from, really, is she...
Thanks for that, John.
Yeah. Did she make that decision? Do you know what I mean? This is the point. See, we're making the assumption that every woman who wears a burqa, or every woman who wears a niqab, wears it because their husband has told them they have to wear it. Whereas I think it would be fair to assume that there are some women out there who wear it as part of their faith because that's what they believe, rightly or wrongly. But that is part of their faith. That's part of what they believe in.
Mm.
So, are we right to take that choice from them and say, no, you can't wear it?
Yeah,
the conditioning goes very deep.
Well, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. But, you know, some of the women do feel that strongly about it, and evidently they do in France because they've gone out and continue to wear it.
To me, there's like two separate examples that I'd give, right? And one of them is saying, right, well, you can't wear your burqa for security reasons, you know, as you're passing through the airport.
Yeah.
Just as you wouldn't be able to wear a motorcycle helmet, or you wouldn't be able to, you know...
Yeah.
That makes sense, and it's even-handed. It's nothing to do with the fact that it's a burqa. It's all to do with the fact that you're concealing your identity.
Even so much as going to the post office and, you know, you're not allowed to wear a motorcycle helmet in the post office.
Mm.
Same thing there as
That's
well.
That's an interesting thing. But to do an outright ban on it in public places, you know, my initial... We talked about this before. My initial thing was that it's an overreach of, you know, the state's powers to do that. But and the problem is, yeah, I mean, if we could ban it and make them stop wearing it, then you may actually be doing some good. But most of these women, very few of these women are actually, honestly saying, I don't want to be wearing this, I'm oppressed. A lot of them are sold on the faith.
Yeah.
They do believe that it's the right thing to do. And so...
I mean, one of the interesting things out of this story for me is, as far as I can see, there's been no mention of the woman's husband in any of this. You know, I don't believe necessarily he was with her when she was arrested.
No, but if she were being pressured, then they would keep him out of it. Not that I'm saying she was.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there are cultures where the women will enforce female circumcision, cutting off clitoris and labia,
yeah,
and sewing up the hole. And there were lots of cultures with human sacrifice where the sacrifices were perfectly happy to go and get sacrificed, even children. Are we going to just stand by like documentary filmmakers and say, well, it's what they want, that's fine?
And this is the interesting thing. This is the question, isn't it, right? Because these people think that this is right. They're happy to go with it. At what point do we step in? And you just had the example of people willing to be sacrificed. Now, I would say that when you know, people are that brainwashed that they think that sacrificing themselves is a good thing, I think that we should step in.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you follow that logic, then you could say that you could build a case for stepping in and banning the burqa.
Or, absolutely, and I can see the case, because I can fully see Trav's point.
Hmm.
Jeez.
But, you know, my thought would be that there are women who choose to wear it. Whether, you know, we think they've been indoctrinated or not is beside the point. They feel that that's what they have to wear.
But a pro-sacrifice person would say, well, some people...
Yeah, yeah, no,
you know,
I totally get that. I totally understand that. I just think, do we really have the right to take that from people?
Hmm. Well, this is the balance that we permanently... trying to sort out. So are you pro or anti burqa then? In terms of right to wear, Trev.
I would have to say that the full face thing, I've got no problem if somebody wants to wear it, but if the state chooses to ban it, then I'd support that too, because that is a way to stop women being oppressed to wear it.
Hmm. So you're kind of on the cusp of this. You know, because you think it does make such a big difference to women's rights that, you know, you don't blame the state for intervening.
That's right.
If there was tomorrow in the UK, if there was a referendum on it, would you vote yes or no?
I don't know that there would be a referendum. It's not really...
This is a thought experiment.
I appreciate that, but your thought experiment has a pretty messed up government saying, I can't decide this one, people. You know
Can I use AV?
Got to mention it at least once every podcast.
I don't think at the moment I could support a full ban like the French have done, simply because I think I'm hoping that if this country remains liberal enough and we don't go down the toilet, that, you know, eventually the following generations will shed the burqa. I think that is a possibility, and I think that would be a better. If there was all of a sudden an increase in the number of, you know, hardline Muslims, then obviously I'd reevaluate my position on that. That's what I'm going to say for now.
Okay, well, John, don't you have to tell the nice ladies and gentlemen about something special?
Yes, we're going to wrap it up because I got to plug some stuff. Well reminded, Trev. You're doing well. You're doing well, mate. first of all, I'll just do the usual things. Check out the blog, thinkrant.blogspot.com. We're on Facebook. Just do a search for ThinkRant. We've got the community on there. Or you can tweet us at ThinkRant on Twitter. Coming up next week, I should have some drums, you know, going bong, 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 bong. It's what a lot of people have been looking forward to. I've got people actually excited about this. It's the free will debate featuring Trev and me. The official title of the debate is Free Will is an Illusion. So I'm actually going to be for the motion. Trevor is going to be against it. Now, Stephen, we've had to write you out of next week.
Yeah.
Because you're unavailable.
Correct.
Oh, crikey. So who's going to be the impartial arbiter?
At the moment, it's pretty certain it's a friend of mine called Rob Robinson. He likes a bit of philosophy as well, so he's going to be well-versed in the arguments and the background to it. We were discussing it today. He is willing to be swayed. He does not have a position on it, so...
That's kind of like me as well, because I'm very interested in hearing what you guys have got to say, because I don't have a particularly strong feeling on it either.
Well, you can always listen to the podcast, Steve, exactly. Next week, yeah. From 8 o'clock, live.
Is it going
to
be live, is it?
It's going to be live. So I highly recommend it. So once you've done whatever you've done, you might be able to catch the second half or something. Yeah. You never know. So have you got anything you want to add to that, Trev, about next week?
No, I'm done. Stick a fork in me. Don't actually stick a fork in me. Just in case any listeners see me out in the street.
They'll think that you've just had your TB injection or something.
I don't know. People come out attacking you with cutlery. A spoon, if you must.
A spoon. Gonna eat you out with a spoon. Forget it. Right.
I didn't. Your mind is. Oh my god.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologise. Right, we're wrapping things up now. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening. So.
Cheers.
That's goodbye from Trev.
And goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next week.